Just rolling in from work and ready to go back to work. And
yeah, it was kind of nice catching a ride up the street with you.
Yeah.
Coming to the station. That's what I like about living in a small town.
That's right. I'm glad I ran into you.
What are we doing today on Tell It Like It Is?
Oh, boy, we got a lot to cover. It's hard to say where we should go. I mean, definitely we're going to talk a little bit about the occupation movement.
Right.
In particular, you know, our more local one, it would be the Occupy Albany movement. And we have a little bit of audio, I think, from the last meeting on Sunday. And there's definitely another meeting coming up this Sunday. And
okay.
It's at the Grand Street Community Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I plan on being there getting more audio from, that'll be the fourth General Assembly. And in addition to that discussion, we actually have a caller, I believe, calling in about 10 minutes, and his name is Sadid Jawad. He's from Iraq. He lives in the Boston area right now. He's a doctor.
Excellent.
And he's just a really close friend of myself and my family, a really great guy. And it'll be just a chat with him, and we'll be just talking about some things with him.
Okay, great. So to begin with, should we go right to the interview, the Occupy Wall Street
The Occupy Wall Street issue. Yeah, if we have audio from that, let's go right into that. This was recorded last Sunday. And these were excerpts. Actually, it was about an hour of audio, and it was edited down. Sarah Kendall, actually, lucky for us, Sarah edited it down.
That one's downloading. It'll be on in just a second. But
okay.
In the meantime, we could play this quick interview the Radio Explosion Kids did in Monday with, and they talked to somebody from Occupy Albany at Occupy Wall Street on Monday. So I'll play that clip, and by the time it finishes playing, I think your clip will be ready.
Let's
Fantastic. Yep. This was Courtney and some of the folks from WGXC went down to Freedom Plaza and interviewed people down there.
So I'm Rana. I'm from Albany and came down here today with a bunch of my neighbors. Second Albany General Assembly last night, and there were several hundred people there. We split into working groups. So we have a whole legal team, a whole logistics team, people being trained to facilitate consensus-based meetings, and other groups working on like media and outreach, and then also physically planning out where and when we're going to start the occupation. And people had a bunch of different ideas last night, and there's another General Assembly on Sunday next week. I don't know what day that is, at 5 o'clock, most likely at Grand Street Community Arts again.
I think it's
which is on Grand Street. So that's it from Albany. People had a lot of different ideas. So we'll be heading back. For each working group on the website. So if you're interested in helping with a specific task or anything, you can go look on there and find other people who are working
What's the
on
website?
The same stuff.
Is that what you're talking about?
OccupyAlbany.org, I think it is. So I'm Rana. I'm from Albany and came down here today with a bunch of my neighbors. And we had our second Albany General Assembly last night, and there were several hundred people there. We split into working groups. So we have a whole legal team, a whole logistics team, people being trained to facilitate consensus-based meetings, and other groups working on like media and outreach, and then also physically planning out where and when we're going to start the occupation. And people had a bunch of different ideas last night, and there's another General Assembly on Sunday next week. I don't know what day that is, at 5 o'clock, most likely at Grand Street Community Arts again.
I think it's
which is on Grand Street. So that's it from Albany. People had a lot of different ideas. So we'll be heading back. For each working group on the website. So if you're interested in helping with a specific task or anything, you can go look on there and find other people who are
What's the website?
The same stuff. OccupyAlbany.org, I think it is.
So that was a clip from Wall Street, and we're going to be following that more in the future on this show as well as on others in the morning. We're just definitely pretty excited what's happening around the nation. I believe it's now 200 cities around the nation are starting the occupation movements. And I heard on yesterday's show on the Watershed, what is it, the Watershed Project or
Watershed Post?
Watershed Post, right. They were talking about, you know, Delhi, New York, having an occupation movement, which there's like two stores in there or something. So they were like, I don't know what they're going to occupy. None of our businesses got any bailouts. But the sentiment, the consciousness, I believe, is there. And they were joking around about this guy with a sign out in Alaska with nothing behind him. And it said, Occupy Tundra. Which is, I just thought that was kind of funny. But the whole point is we're reclaiming our land and our country back from the corporations that seem to be running it right now. And I feel like that's a pretty important issue. And also we're going to talk a little bit later about the Veterans for Peace situation and the raid in Boston at 1:30 a.m. on Monday night, where some veterans who are close friends of my family were actually beaten up by the SWAT team types.
Right.
And we had...
arbitrarily just moved them out at 1:30 in the morning because for some reason the park had to be cleaned or something. There wasn't even any real reason behind it.
They made some excuse. I forget what it, you know. We had Veterans for Peace call in actually on the show with Phil yesterday morning, and it just sounded like pretty inappropriate police action. Which I don't even know if you can call it police, because you know the Boston Police Department. These are blue collar folks who actually have been having a great relationship with the folks being camped out there for 4 weeks. These were some military type stormtroopers with masks on, helmets, black gear, weapons, tear gas, and the lot. And unfortunately, some of our veterans who have served in foreign wars were injured and arrested in that incident. So we'll report a little more on that. So should we play a song now?
Sounds good to me.
All right, great. This is Michael Franti and Spearhead.
Those who start wars never fight them. And those who fight wars, they never like them. And those who write laws, they can recite them. Just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. No, never ever gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. No, never ever gonna tell you why. No, they only wanna tell you lies. It's time. Take our girls, it's time to go home. Don't take our boys away, no. Don't take our girls away, no. Don't take our boys away, no. Forever, they can defend them.
Don't take our boys away, no. Don't take our girls.
It's time to go home.
Don't take our boys away, no. Don't take our girls away, no. Don't take our boys away, no.
Okay, all right, that was Michael Franti and Spearhead with Time to Go Home off the Yell Fire album. Great song there. So we're gonna have a little conversation now with a good friend from North Shore of Boston, Sadeed Jawad. Sadeed's calling in, and I hope he can hear us. Sadeed, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Kieran.
Hi, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you. How about you?
Not too bad. I'm here in the studio with Christina on Tell It Like It Is, which every Thursday from 10 to 11 a.m. we cover all sorts of issues, and we've been talking a little bit about the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Albany, and we just wanted to get a voice from the East Coast and just see how life is going over there. What have you been up to lately?
Well, it's raining since early morning, and I took my son to school, and actually everyone was soaked in rain because, anyhow, so but still, that's a beautiful day. I like it. It's, I'm happy today, and I'm happy to be part of this beautiful show.
Okay, well, thanks for calling in. Yeah, well, we got rain out here, too, and how's the boy doing in school? What's school like for him? Is he liking it?
Yeah, so my son, his name is Ali, and he's 5 years old. He goes to a local school. The name is Israel, and he usually takes the bus. He likes the school. He likes his teacher, which is very helpful for me and his mom. I mean, to be part of the circle, the school is very important.
Nice. Well, that's good.
Cornerstone, yeah.
That's good. I'm glad to hear he's doing well. Sadeed, I wanted to just ask you, maybe we could talk a little bit about your background and at this point, we haven't talked too much lately, but I guess you're not so super new to the country anymore, but you did arrive somewhat recently to the United States, and how long ago was that now?
It's almost 4 years. I came November 2007.
November 2007. Okay, so how's that going for you? You feel like you're pretty much getting used to it? And
yeah, well, I found something that I didn't expect. When I came to the United States, I thought I'll be lonely. Honestly, I didn't think that people are so friendly and welcoming. But thank God, I fell into bright hands. I have wonderful circle of friends and people caring, helping always, which helped me a lot because my situation was sort of unique. I came with my son, as you know, just the two of us. So I left my wife behind. My son was, he has health issues, so he needed some medical care. But for sure, I wouldn't survive for a week without those people who helped me.
Wow, that's great. So so you were coming from, where were you coming from now?
I am from Iraq, or some people call it Iraq. My city is Babylon, the ancient city in Iraq, and the Bible everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Babylon is 60 miles south to Baghdad. For the American standards, it's going to be a town.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It equals a state in my country.
Okay, well, I'm just kind of interested in some of the differences between what's happening in Babylon with what's happening in Boston. What would you say one of the biggest changes or the biggest difference? I know there's probably so many, but what's one of the biggest ones that you experienced coming from Babylon to Boston?
Actually, the differences are, as you said, many, many of them.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky with one of these differences or difficulties that I had. Good language. I could communicate since the day I came here, which is a big deal for many immigrants.
Mm.
Then there is the culture, which is absolutely very different. The Middle East is different than here. The way you deal with people deal with you. Sometimes things are offensive in our culture, while here they are just normal, part of everyday life. I think, to be precise, what makes the people different is the environment they live in. So, just like people who live in cold environment are different than people who live in hot environment. I believe that it's easier to live in this society and blend in because people are, more accepting, and I think this is due to the peace in mind. I mean, when you are living in a peaceful place, you are quiet, you are more friendly and welcoming. While if you live in a violent environment, then you are always intimidated, scared of everyone. You know what I mean? So I call it, in my country, especially for the last decade, we have a trust crisis. Because I can't trust anyone I meet in the street or anyone who comes to my house. So because America, which I pray that will always be in peace, and everyone around the world, I think it makes it easier for them to accept people. And again, I'm lucky it's America because the first 2 weeks, I guess, after the first 2 weeks, I was on the train going to Boston. And literally on that vehicle of the train, there was maybe 15 nationalities. You see all the colors, you hear all languages, so you don't feel very strange.
Sadine, may I ask, this is Christina, I wanted to ask...
Hi, Christina, yeah.
Good morning. Have you experienced, though, after 9/11, many immigrants, not necessarily Muslim immigrants, experienced racism and retaliation, unjustified, and have you experienced any of that at all?
Honestly, no.
Good.
Not me, and for me, maybe I don't expect to get this because I don't have fair hair, but still I blend easily in the society. But my wife, who wears the headscarf, which is obvious Muslim, Muslim custom, I mean. No, she didn't face anything like racism or discrimination, but it's there. I mean, everyone knows that it's there because people are different.
Well,
yes, go ahead, please.
No, no, and I only bring this up in our town, in Hudson, which is a population of about 8,000 people. Part of what people in the town did, some friends of mine and others who are interested in doing this, is we got an international dinner together at a local church, specifically to counteract any of that, to almost preempt it. And what it was to bring people together once a year around food. And because we have also a large Bangladeshi population in this area, and
uh-huh.
people wore headscarves, and we wanted to make sure preemptively that people understood that we were all part of the same community.
Yeah. Well, I believe it's. So I'll give you a very simple example. The next door neighbor in our building, he's a wonderful person, and. We meet every now and then in the elevator, on the stairs, in the parking lot. So one time I met him in the Starbucks. So we started talking and talking, and then he asked me about my wife, and he said this, which I was so glad that he asked it. He said, "Well, is it okay for me to say hello to her?" I said, "Yeah, absolutely. My wife, we were both physicians in New York."
Mm-hmm.
So my wife used to deal with hundreds of people every day, whether in the emergency department, in the general ward, in the hospital. So my point is, always the problems between any two people or any two nations or any two even planets, I guess, that they don't talk to each other.
Mm.
If people talk to each other, they will understand each other, and then many things that look like scary would come very silly. So this wonderful neighbor, because my wife wears the headscarf, and because my wife is I'm not saying she's not smiling to everyone, which is, I guess, everyone is not doing still, but he thought that maybe she's an introvert, or she doesn't like to speak to people. So from my wife's side, she thinks people, it's just a lack of communication. I mean, to put it very shortly, lack of communication makes people away from each other.
Sadiq, why, may I ask also, because I also, there's a large Iraqi refugee population in Albany, New York, the capital, and I have a friend who works very hard to assist and welcome these folks, and also to provide a lot of legal and possible financial assistance.
Right.
It is, and I actually went to a year ago a wonderful big dinner again, food, up at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. But my question is to you: why did you come to the States? I mean, I don't want to talk about it in a personal way, but just give a sense of why this immigration. Did you want to immigrate? Was it painful to leave your country? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Thank you. First of all, I thank you and thank your friend. I thank everyone who helps, whether my people or other people. Hello, are you there, Christina?
Yes, yes.
We're still here. Yes. Sorry about that. We have a phone. Sometimes it likes to act up and just ignore it.
I thank everyone who helps my people or any refugee who comes to this country. My situation was different. I came here because my son had a heart problem.
Mm.
And we were able to go to India to get his first heart surgery. And then I got this opportunity to come to the States to have his second heart surgery. And because what's happening in my country and, I mean, between the military stuff in Iraq and different views of people, and because of the people who are in the power in my country, and this doesn't mean people in the government. I mean, power is just who carries the gun, who mm-hmm. influence everything. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't go back because this will be, it was very dangerous for myself, for my life. So I had to stay, apply for asylum, and I got my asylum 3 years after, and was able to bring, with luck and God's help, bring my wife over to here.
Yeah, that must have been a tough time when the family was separated, waiting for your wife to come also.
Yeah, it was really tough. But again, I lived with people, and I consider them my family. They took me as a son, my son as a grandson, at a place called House of Peace, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, if I was the peace, I would pick this place to be my house.
That's very nice of you, Sadiq. It's great to see that gratitude to the Carrie and John at the House of Peace, and I'm so glad that you made these connections. And
Kieran, can we just take a second and talk about what the House of Peace is?
Sure. Just briefly, maybe I should explain. The House of Peace is a community household in the North Shore in Ipswich, Massachusetts, that works with war refugees from around the world for over 20 years now, and they also work with adults with disabilities who live there permanently, whereas the refugees tend to come through for shorter periods of time, a couple of years, or a couple of months, or maybe 4 years, depending. And right now, the folks at the House of Peace have been working a lot with some folks like Sadiq, with children from Iraq in need of medical care, for example. Boston, I should probably add that Boston has one of the best children's hospitals in, is it the world, Sadiq, or in the country? I know in the country that Boston...
Well, I think it's the world, yes.
In the world. I know Shriners has a very superior burn care unit, and Shriners has a superior children's hospital, but so does it's a Boston Children's Hospital, right?
Yes. Mass General.
And they've been, and Mass General, okay, and they've been just phenomenal. They've been just great, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just a brief overview of the House of Peace. They also work, in their larger sense of their work, they work against war, and they work for peace in various ways.
I have one more question, and I really appreciate you coming on the air this morning, because I think it's important for people to understand, and just as you said, if you understand, if you hear someone else speak or you communicate with someone, you can understand them, and I think it's important for people to understand the ramifications of war and what happens as a result of it, and sometimes it's better to understand that on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah.
As a personal experience, not as, you know, numbers. But I wanted to ask, you're a doctor, a medical doctor. I've worked for 15 years in the past as a practical nurse in hospitals and emergency rooms also. And I wanted to ask, what was life before the U.S. intervention in Iraq as a medical doctor? What was it like to work as a doctor in your town? How was your life? Did you have a comfortable living? What was Iraq like before?
I hope I'm not taking your time, but
no, this is good.
The change started actually in the 90s. So it started 1991. So if I may change the question into Iraq before 91 and Iraq after 91.
Okay.
Yeah, before 91, the healthcare system was wonderful. Mm-hmm. We were the best in the Middle East, literally the best. We had organ transplantation. wonderful hospitals, primary, secondary, tertiary, as we call it, health care for people was wonderful. Absolutely everything was cheap, or you may pay like 50 cents for, we call it a pass, to get to, to see the doctor or to go to the surgery. But, after 91, everything started to collapse. Unfortunately, the people in the government that time weren't efficient, and they didn't pay attention for what's important for the survival of the population. So the healthcare started to decline, and so now, if I go back to your question, before the war, I worked as a physician, and my salary was $10 a month.
Wow.
Which is not enough for a shirt.
How did you survive?
It's amazing how people can survive, Christina, in difficult or terrible situations. We adapt. We adapt to the most unbearable situations. And I was lucky because my family was able to help me financially and support me with everything. But it was a very difficult time. So this was on my personal part. Finances was very bad. But in work was terrible. I lost tens of patients because I didn't have one or two ampules of Lasix, which is a water medicine for the people who doesn't know it. Or
a diuretic,
We didn't have oxygen. We didn't have any supplies. I usually mention this, that I used gloves to do some minor surgeries because I didn't have gloves. So, it was very tough.
Was this because of the embargo?
Yes.
Yeah.
Embargo and corruption.
Yeah.
To be honest, corruption may be more than the embargo because the embargo is from the outside, corruption is inside.
Mm-hmm.
So supplies get to the hospital, but leave the hospital through the back door, and no one can speak anything. Anyhow, yes, this was before the war or during the war, and after, and now, because I contact my friends there, there is lots of money, but not much services. And again, it's corruption.
We really wish the best for your country and your family. And we're just thinking positive thoughts. We just hope that we can all have peace and once again and get back to life as usual without this corruption. I mean, sometimes you wonder, is corruption ever going to stop? You know, like, it's just a question I have. Some people say it's human nature, that we're all corrupt, that we're all, you know.
No, I don't believe so.
I don't know about that.
Well, it's not human nature because simply I think people who are corrupted are just people in places that affect the destiny of thousands or of millions. While the clean people and the good people, plenty out there, but they are not in the right position. That's it. And I believe peace will prevail at the end because people will get tired of fighting each other. And for my little experience, I have never seen anyone who got into war and won. No one did win in a war. Always. And look at the people, I mean, no offense, but look at America and Japan. And now the populations are having very nice friendship. I don't know how to explain it actually. But I believe that peace will prevail. I don't say the end, because it's not going to be the end, it's going to be the beginning. And people are awakening, whether in this country or in other countries. People seeing that a handshake can make much bigger, going further, bigger step of progress than a clashing cuff, as we call it, or a machine gun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you're right, Sadiq. I think people are waking up and realizing that it's not necessary. I hope this is maybe part of the maturation of the human race.
Yeah.
And as a doctor, I know that you know probably more than most the suffering that people go through and how to alleviate it.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you very much.
Sadiq, it's been so great having you on the show, for calling and just, you know, just chatting it up, and much love to your family, to your wife and the beautiful daughter and beautiful son.
Thank you, Karen. Thank you. So nice to be part of your show. Thank you.
Okay, well, maybe we'll hear from you again, and I hope to see you soon, inshallah.
Inshallah.
All right.
Thank you, and salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum. Alaikum as-salam.
Thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That was Sadiq Jawad calling from North Shore of Boston, a doctor from Babylon, just south of Baghdad, and just checking in about how life's going down there, up there, and some nice insight and some history for us to all ponder and think about as we move forward. So I think maybe we should hear a song now. What do you think, Christina?
Sounds good to me.
This is Terry Hall and Mushtaq.
عايش في الخارج ولكن زايد فوجدة بلاش كلوش خطر في المطار اخويا كيما ولاد بزنس في الدم المشاكل في الراس عايش في الغربة والهم شتا الفرق بينا تفاحة والرمانة حنا عايشين انا عايش دبانة في الوطانة الدنيا مليتها وما المهم سمومة الناس تحرق وتفوت البحر باش نوصل لهنا
and sound.
Terry Hall and Mushtaq here on WGXC 90.7 FM, hands-on community radio, Catskill, Hudson, Acre. Thank you all for listening. This is Kieran Riley with Christina Malisoff on Tell It Like It Is. And we just heard from Sadiq Jawad calling from the Boston area. And we're going to move on to a discussion on the occupation movements. I went up to Albany last Sunday for the third General Assembly for the Occupy Albany movement, and we have a little bit of edited audio. Hopefully you'll be able to make out what folks are saying, some interesting things there. So a brief audio from last General Assembly at the Occupy Albany here. So we're going to try to play that.
Let's see if I can get
right
that going.
Now.
Okay.
And then we may have a few words to say regarding that meeting. It seems like at any moment these folks are get ready to occupy.
What I want to do is get some education to these people. We have a great facility
doing a lot of stuff, but we need you guys to get involved with these communities that are being impoverished and in trouble.
We had funding for 1 year from the state, and it will not go back into either the 2010 budget or the 2011 budget. We are having a rally on Tuesday at 11:15 right up the street in front of the governor's mansion. I'm inviting each of you to attend, and if all of you come, it will be a success. My work here is done, but the thing is, we're trying to get people from all over Albany to come and to deliver a message to the governor that we want to maintain snug in Albany, that we need snug in Albany, and that it means a lot to people. Snug saves lives. The number of incidents of violence in Albany since snug started last October have dropped by 21%. The number of injuries to people have dropped by 29%. So it is working. It's a public health model. It is not a law enforcement model. It uses public health methods to get to people who are most likely to be involved in violence and to help them define different pathways. So I have a petition. I have a few flyers. I saw some on the table. And I just want to thank you. But I'll just end by saying 10-11, October 11, Tuesday at 11:15 in front of the governor's mansion. It is a peaceful demonstration. Thank you.
Wall Street is synonymous around the world with capitalism. You know, that is why the application is there. Albany is not synonymous with capitalism. It's synonymous with the state government. The capital is the most logical place to target.
Our proposal is that we decide before we go to working groups on the where as a group, because the where is symbolic. And then we let the rest of the details be decided by a working group that would work. I know that there are people who want to occupy immediately. The one thing I want to say to that is the New York City occupation took months of planning, seven general assemblies before they started to occupy. So we want this to last and keep going. That's the same thing. I'll stop talking. That's my quote.
I think we need a work group, and I think we need enough of a discussion here that the work group can be fully informed by people's thoughts. I strongly agree with that by the capital. I think things like Snug, where the politicians are giving a $5 billion tax cut to millionaires and funding programs that are saving lives in poor communities, is the kind of thing we should talk about. And I think we may need more than a few minutes of conversation about the capital or not the capital to really inform the work group. I secondly want to say that the idea of occupying and taking space is really important. It's cold in Albany in winter, you all know that. Outside versus inside is important. The extent to which we can actually take space in the Capitol or in the plaza is important. So we may need something of a feedback loop between a working group and this group before we get to our final place. So I think we're all feeling that we need to do something together, but I hope that we'll all work with each other enough to make sure that once we do it, we can do it. The one last thing I want to say is there are people all over the state that want to support us here in Albany. And instead of buses coming from Albany to New York City, buses will come to Albany to help us carry out.
This is Al Jazeera.
That was the Occupy Albany meeting, our excerpts from it. And we're going to go segue right on into some words of wisdom from the late, great Howard Zinn.
What kind of organizing gives me the most hope these days? Well, I think it's the kind of organizing that unites various groups around what I think may be the central issue for this next period in American history. There's a kind of organizing that took place in Seattle, in Washington, and in Prague, and which is international in scope, and which is based on an alliance among many, many different groups who have different agendas, whether it's feminism or environmentalism, or decent wage for low-paid people, health and care, and so on. What unites all of these people is the fact that none of these things are obtainable. None of the things that people need are obtainable unless we have a massive change in the way the resources of the society are distributed, and the economic system, and so any kind of organizing that is aimed at that very fundamental thing, that kind of radical thing, redistribution of wealth, tearing away more and more at the system that is based on corporate profit, and trying to build a society more and more based on human need. That kind of multi-group and international organizing, it seems to me, is the most important.
There you have it. Howard Zinn, multi-group international organizing seems to be happening. So with that, we're going to segue. This one goes out to the occupation folks, but also to the greedy corporations that have caused the spark. Here you have Public Enemy. Shut them down.
Kieran.
Sorry we didn't have time for the rest of PE.
But listen, tune in, folks, next week to another Tell It Like It Is, every Thursday from 10 to 11. This is definitely community radio. And a quick shout out to Johnny, just to say we're sorry about your loss. And
we miss you, Johnny Ortiz. I hope to see you next week.
All right. And we'll see you next week. Yeah.
This is Bill McKibben from 350.org, and you're listening to WGXE, that's 90.7 on your FM dial, ACRA, putting the community back in radio.
Are you currently receiving food stamps? Have you lost food due to the recent flooding and/or power outages caused by Hurricane Irene? If so, you may be